And our people are drifting from door to door. Can't find no heaven, I don't care where they go. Let me tell you, people, just before I go, these hard times will kill you just dry long so. When you hear me singing my roll on some song, these hard times can last us so very long. If I ever get off this killing floor, I'll never get down this low no more. No, 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 I'll never get down this low no more. And you say you had money, you better be sure. Don't these hard times will drive you from door to door.
Give me my money, or if I make you wish you had to give me now.
Well, I can't got anything to give you. Now I done told you where we...
Oh, you ain't got to give me off, did it?
Hold on, don't shoot me.
All right, all right, boys, all right, all right.
How do you do, madam? I'm a coal man.
No, thank you. I have a coal man.
Yeah, but you don't understand. I am the coal man.
Makes no difference.
I'm just a coal man selling the hottest stuff in town. I'm just a coal man, baby. In the winter, I'm good to have around. Now, I sell coal and I sell ice. In the wintertime, a coal man's mighty nice. Now, I'm just a coal man, selling the hottest stuff in town.
You say you're just a coal man.
That's right, baby.
Selling the hottest stuff in town.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my present coal man serves me whether I'm up or whether I'm down.
I can do that.
He makes his delivery right on time.
Sure.
And his product contains no slack or line.
Neither does mine.
So how come you say you're such a coal man, selling the hottest stuff in town?
Mm-hmm.
Now listen, I'm satisfied with my form of heat.
Yeah.
In the winter, I drop and toast my feet.
Mm-hmm.
I've had him for quite a while, and I'll keep him still.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I say I'll change, but I don't think I will.
Now, I'm a coal salesman, and here's a tip. I've got a sales talk that's busted my lip. My merchandise is extra clean, so just take a look, baby. It's the best you've ever seen. It handles well, no clinkers form. Make you feel good in the worst kind of storm. Taking care of your comfort is my mission. Baby, is your heating apparatus in good condition?
You say you're just a coal man.
That's right, baby.
Selling the hottest stuff in town.
Uh-huh.
You also said in the wintertime...
What?
You're a lovely thing to have around.
Like to be.
Your sales talk was mighty fine.
Yes.
Tell me more, brother. I might change my mind.
I'm ill.
Since you're such a big shot coal man, selling the hottest stuff in town.
Now, Mama, Papa's just a little old coal man, selling the hottest stuff in town. Now, baby, I'm just a coal man. In the winter, I'm good to have around. I'll take your order and fill your bin. So get it cleaned out and I'll put it right in. 'Cause I'm just a coal man, selling the hottest stuff in town. I'm just a coal man, selling the hottest stuff in town, I say, selling the hottest stuff in town.
Sold, brother, sold.
The coldest stuff in town. That tune by Whistlin' Bob Howe and Frankie Griggs from a release called Please Warm My Wiener, Old Time Hokum Blues there off of Yazoo Records. Plus, we heard another Yazoo release called Complete Early Recordings of Skip James. That was the Hard Time Killin' Floor Blues, a classic from Skip James. You know, when you go to jail for a gun crime, you receive the prison sentence, but your family suffers right along with you. You leave them to fend for themselves. Your brother or sister is left without a best friend. Your sons and daughters are left without a parent. Your mother and father worry about you every night. When you commit a gun crime, you're not the only one who pays a price. Your family serves a sentence, too. Gun crimes hit home. A public service announcement brought to you by the Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council. Well, let's see here. Up next, we've got the duo of Tom Dutson and Robert Pete Williams. These were recorded in the Angola State Penitentiary down in Louisiana. Robert Pete Williams was found and recorded there, and after his release, put out some excellent tunes as well. Tom Dutson must have been in as well. And here they recorded Dig My Grave with a Silver Spade. Robert Pete Williams and Tom Dutson on the Deep Blues Hour.
Well, dig my grave with a silver spade. Well, dig my grave with a silver spade. You may lay me down with a golden chain. Have you ever heard a church bell tone? Have you ever heard a church bell tone? Have you ever heard a church bell tone? Didn't you know that poor boy's dead and gone? While there's two white horses in a line. While there's two white horses in a line. While there's two white horses is in a line, gonna take me to my burying ground. Have you ever heard a church bell tone? Have you ever heard a church bell tone? Have you ever heard that church bell tone? Didn't you know that poor boy was dead and gone? Will you see that my grave will keep clean? Will you see that my grave will keep clean? Will you see that my grave will keep clean? Didn't you know that poor boy was dead and gone? It's a bad wind have never changed. It's a bad wind have never changed. It's a bad wind have never changed. Didn't you know that poor boy dead and gone? Well, dig my grave with a silver spade. Well, dig my grave with a silver spade. Well, dig my grave with a silver spade. You may let me down with a golden chain. While there's two white horses in a line. While there's two white horses in a line. While there's two white horses is in a line. Gonna take me to my burying ground. Have you ever heard that coughing sound? Have you ever heard that coughing sound? Have you ever heard coughed and sound. Didn't you know that Bobo didn't go?
Yo, mule come, whoa, mule. Can't get the saddle on the mule.
Okay.
Whoa, mule.
Fine instrumental there on the guitar by, let's see here, by Reverend Gary Davis. Gosh, of course. There it was called The Boy Was Kissing the Girl and Playing the Guitar at the Same Time. Found that off of the Bluesville collection called The Bluesville Years Volume 6, Blues Sweet Carolina Blues from Reverend Gary Davis. Plus we heard from Butch Cage and Willie B. Thomas. And that was Whoa Mule. All right. Time for a few more tracks here as we wrap up the show for this hour on the Deep Blues Hour. We're going to hear next from Gus Cannon and his Jug Stompers. This is the Wolf River Blues. on the Deep Blues Hour.
Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx.
Where to even start today? The last 24 hours have been almost surreal here in the United States. Let's start with what exactly would I do about guns? You know, one of the things that has come up in the last 24 to 48 hours after we've had not only the Buffalo shooting, but also now the Uvalde, Texas school shooting has been when people say we've got to do something about the guns, there will be those on the right who say, what exactly do you want to do? Steve Kerr, the coach of the NBA's Golden State Warriors, went on this impassioned rant, and many like Ben Shapiro and others said, I don't hear any specific suggestions there. So let me give you my specific things that I would try with a couple of caveats as we get into this. Whatever anyone proposes, whatever I propose, whatever is ever proposed, you will always have people saying, that won't solve the whole problem. This one idea won't solve the whole problem of mass shootings or even the sub problem of mass shootings specifically in schools. And they're correct. This is such a widespread issue that no one thing will solve or prevent every mass shooting. But that's a reason to do many things rather than to do none. So that's number one. You know, no one treatment cures all cancer. Blood pressure medication alone doesn't prevent all strokes and heart attacks. But you say, well, let's do blood pressure medication, exercise, diet, meditation, whatever. Seatbelts don't stop every car death. But we say seatbelts are one tool, safer cars are another. Crash testing is another. Road design is another. Driver education. Okay. I also saw a post bemoaning that the left has all the same ideas as to what to do as we had 10 years ago. We've tried none of them. Of course, we're going to have many of the same ideas. We've not tried any of these things. And many of us believe that they would work. So let's get into the list of things that I would do and go through them one by one. First, we've got to end the gun show loophole. The gun show loophole refers to the fact that federal law doesn't require unlicensed private sellers, like me if I just have some guns and I want to go to a gun show and sell them. There's no federal law that requires a background check for gun purchases. That's the gun show loophole, okay? You've got to close that. Number two, universal background checks. When we talk about a universal background check, it would require essentially every firearms transaction in the United States to be recorded and to go through the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. And that is sometimes called the private sale exemption. You've got to deal with that. Universal background checks aren't required by U.S. federal law. You've got 22 states in D.C. that require them for at least some private sales, but that's got to go federal. Number three, we need a mandatory waiting period from the time that you go and you say, I want the gun, to the time when you get the gun. Absolutely imperative. You've got to have a mandatory waiting period. Four, what about no high capacity weapons for those under age 25? You can get your you know, single action firearms or your handgun, I guess, at age 18. But you've got to wait until age 25 for certain high capacity weapons. Number five, mandatory gun insurance, maybe even gun insurance that's more expensive without a parent co-signing if you're under 25. I'll get back to that. What about a required community support letter for anyone under 25 who wants a gun? Meaning you've got to have, I don't know, sort of like you would have two or three references for a job. You need two or three references from people over age 25 if you are under age 25. I'll get back to why that may be a really important thing. Number seven, we probably want to ban some weapons. Yes, we already do it, right? You can't get nukes. You can't get shoulder mounted RPGs. We might just expand that list a little bit. There are simply some weapons that are of no real value except as mass killing machines. I'm not pretending that I have the exact point at which you draw the line, but we probably want to look at that. Number eight, a periodic mental health evaluation, including when you first obtain the firearms. All these right wingers saying the problem is mental health. Well, okay, let's do something about it. Require an initial and a periodic mental health evaluation. Number nine, an extensive licensing process. Okay, you need a written and practical test for a driver's license. It should be the same for guns. Also, the training and licensing period shouldn't be one weekend. It should be longer, like with cars. We should have a gun buyback program. Okay, that will make the off ramp for lots of people much more reasonable. There should be a gun buyback program. They've worked in many other countries. Now, many of you will see that list and you will say, but David, sir, if you're that polite, not those things wouldn't have stopped this specific shooter in Uvalde, Texas. Well, some of the things I listed would have had no impact, like the gun show loophole would have had no impact in this particular case. But others would. OK, 18-year-old shooter. if you got the guns legally, right? Because these were guns that he was allowed to get. If you limit high capacity weapons to age 25, then this shooter might have had a handgun, and almost certainly fewer people die if this particular shooter had only a handgun. Having to have a certificate of gun insurance might have dissuaded the guy from going and getting those guns because it would have been an additional cost. Community support letters. Everybody has been posting to social media that we knew about this guy. There were adults in the area who knew this guy was unstable. Well, if that's true, it might have been more difficult for this shooter to obtain two or three community support letters from adults saying, I think it's fine for this individual to have a firearm. It would have been an obstacle. A mental health evaluation could have been an obstacle. OK, so some of these things wouldn't have affected this particular shooting. Some of these would. The intangible, of course, is culture. How do you deal with American gun culture? For many Americans that are insular and don't know what the rest of the world is like, they may not realize how bizarre it is that we have this fetishizing of guns, celebration of gun culture, condemnation of intelligence. And I think it might have been Isaac Asimov who said something along the lines of, and this was in the 80s, I hope I'm quoting this roughly correctly, something along the lines of, my ignorance is seen as a legitimate counterpoint to your intelligence. It's something like that. We have a real cultural problem in the United States as well. And I admit none of my ideas would impact that. OK, so there are some ideas. And hey, guys, nothing else is working. So we might as well try these things. Let me know your thoughts. There are growing questions, and we still don't know the full scope of this, about what the hell were police doing during the 40 to 60 minute period that the 18-year-old Uvalde, Texas shooter was in the school. Now, this is not about criticizing police. It's about thinking critically about the supposed solutions that Republicans say would be solutions. We need to think about whether that makes any sense, given what we are now learning took place in Uvalde, Texas. We are now learning that while the gunman was inside the school for 40 to 60 minutes after being confronted by an armed officer, police were just outside stopping parents desperate from going in to try to stop the shooter. Now, you could say, well, those parents could have gotten themselves killed. True. But why weren't the police in the school? Why weren't the police actually doing something during those 40 to 60 minutes that would have had an impact? We now have footage. OK, there is now footage of armed police outside the school during the shooting, pinning a man believed to be a parent to the ground. OK, take a look at this. And you might, so you see here, police have a guy pinned to the ground. That's not the shooter. That's believed to be a parent or some kind of school employee desperate to go in and do something because the police weren't. Okay, I think you get the idea. Department of Public Safety Director Steve McCraw told reporters that 40 to 60 minutes elapsed from when the gunman opened fire until when the tactical team got in and shot the gunman. According to the two officials, the shooter went into a classroom and locked the door. Police on scene left him in there. When Border Patrol showed up, they couldn't break down the door. And after 40 to 60 minutes, a member of the school staff unlocked the classroom door with a key. So we're still getting the details here. This is increasingly being looked at. What on earth happened? But my point is less about, I mean, listen, we need to investigate why police did what they did. There are anecdotal reports, and it's still early, but there are anecdotal reports that the reason it was Border Patrol ultimately was that the police on scene were refusing to go in. Now, that's just, it's an assertion that's been made, and we want to be really careful and make sure we know what actually happened. But the question we need to grapple with here is, if this is what trained police did, how on earth do we think that armed civilians in the schools are the solution? Armed teachers or armed janitors or armed lunch ladies? It doesn't make any sense. And so we need to figure out the specifics of what happened here for sure. But there are a lot of other questions that remain unanswered, bigger picture, about what should be done. Beto O'Rourke confronted the Texas Republican governor and lieutenant governor yesterday at a press conference about the Uvalde, Texas shooting, and Beto was marched out by police officers. Okay. There are some who are saying this was a despicable a grandstanding attempt. I completely disagree. Beto is actually showing passion and concern for what's going on. Beto is not blaming doors like Republicans increasingly are. Let's look at the confrontation. You will hear that as governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, who said mental illness is the only problem here. Greg Abbott tries to turn it over to Dan Patrick, the lieutenant governor, and then Beto interrupts. And then they start insulting Beto and telling him he's embarrassing or whatever. And then Beto is ultimately removed by police.
This time I will pass the mic to Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me.
Sit down.
You're out of line and an embarrassment.
Hey, sit down. Don't play this.
So if you're listening, Beto has now been approached by police.
Is right now, and you are doing nothing.
No, he needs to get his ass out of here. This isn't the place to talk this over.
This is totally predictable when you.
Sir, you're out of line. Sir, you're out of line.
They do not like being confronted, do they? And you see Ted Cruz like a statue on the stage.
Sir, you are out of line. Please leave this auditorium. I can't believe you're a sick son of a bitch that would come to a deal like this to make a political issue.
He's called a sick son of a bitch for making this a political issue. When is the right time to talk about the politics of what's going on? Because it's a political issue for a Republican governor and a Republican lieutenant governor who are willing to consider any solution to the gun violence problem as long as it doesn't involve dealing with the guns. That's politics. And this idea of, oh, you're injecting politics. Give me a break. And there is Beto, marched out of there by police. Oh, Beto was rude. Let's denounce him for his tone. He didn't wait his turn to speak. He didn't wait enough days before it's okay to talk about politics. Beto is saying what anyone with common sense has been thinking and saying for a really long time. And they are doing politics by packing the stage with Republicans. They're doing politics by excluding dealing with gun safety as a solution. They'll blame doors, rap music. I'm going to play a clip later of them blaming rap music. And yet, shame on Beto. And Beto, after getting kicked out, he kept going outside. This is another viral video, more than 2 million views.
50th in the nation in mental health care access. 50th. There are only 50 states in the nation. We are dead last. The number one provider of mental health care services under Greg Abbott in the state of Texas is the county jail system in the state of Texas. The largest inpatient mental health care facility in the state of Texas is the Harris County Jail.
All right, so you get the picture. And listen, Beto did nothing wrong. When nobody else is willing to do anything that connects to the actual issue, at least he's out there trying to get some attention. Let me know your thoughts. Find me on Twitter at @DPacman. We'll take a quick break and be right back. Well, the National Rifle Association has put out a statement responding to the shooting in Uvalde, Texas. You may also recall that the National Rifle Association is having its annual convention in Texas starting tomorrow, Friday. Donald Trump is scheduled to speak there. Republican Texas Governor Greg Abbott is scheduled to speak there. Ted Cruz is scheduled to speak there. So the NRA puts out this response, and I don't know whether to call it disgusting. I don't know whether to call it depraved or dystopian, but it's definitely really bad. Take a look at this. The NRA statement on the shooting is, quote, "Our deepest sympathies are with the families and victims involved in this horrific and evil crime. On behalf of our members, we salute the courage of school officials, first responders, and others who offered their support and services." Okay, although there's increased questions as to whether, how and why the police confronted the shooter outside the school. And then the shooter went in and spent 40 to 60 minutes shooting up a classroom until police ultimately went in and stopped him. Kind of a weird thing. The NRA continues to say, although an investigation is underway and facts are still emerging, we recognize this was the act of a lone, deranged criminal. A lone, deranged criminal with really easy access to guns with no requirement for gun insurance, with no limitations on high capacity firearms, despite being only 18 years old, thanks to, in part, the lobbying actions of the NRA. And by the way, the whole, you know, as they say here, a lone deranged criminal gets to the mental illness component. Also, in a country that says, half of the country says, mental illness is the problem, but they won't fund mental health treatment. As we gather in Houston, the statement goes on to say, we will reflect on these events, pray for the victims, recognize our patriotic members. Wait, in the midst of this, your members are the patriots, what? And pledge to redouble our commitment to making our schools secure. So on the prayer, I'm a little sick of the after the fact prayer once people are dead. If the prayer worked, why wouldn't it prevent the shootings if you pray the right way? Pray to prevent the shootings, and yet they keep happening. And the most insidious thing is we're going to redouble our efforts to make schools secure. The NRA exists to sell guns. Okay? When they say redouble our efforts to make schools secure, they're talking about arming teachers and arming everyone to sell more guns for their clients. Their clients are the gun manufacturers at the end of the day. A disgusting statement from the NRA. Obviously, the convention should be canceled. But in fact, Donald Trump is doubling down on speaking there. And we'll get to that a little bit later. Let's talk about solutions, so-called, to the gun violence problem. I'm going to play a clip for you here of the last roughly 24 hours of Fox News and the roughly 50 solutions that they have proposed to the issue of gun violence. It might not come as a surprise that none of the solutions relate to gun safety. Okay, let's just take a listen and see if you can find the trend here. I'll give you a hint. It's none of these things have to do with guns, unless you mean giving more people guns.
I advocate always for an armed security guard,
armed school safety officer,
armed. Okay. Deputy
arming teachers,
potentially arm and prepare and train teachers and other administrators,
armed school staffers,
bring in policemen,
training the students themselves,
retired military, retired law enforcement. We can offer them tax breaks.
If you give law enforcement the opportunity to impose martial law, we can guarantee safety and security.
Securing that perimeter, kind of providing kind of a ring of steel.
You have the fences, you have the main administration building, and then you have wide gaps on either side. The fencing's not very high.
Were the doors locked?
Bulletproof glass.
All of these shootings have happened at the same time that we see religion and Christian values. And
that's another one. It's got, the problem isn't guns. The problem is lack of God.
Judeo-Christian values declining.
Anybody who decides that they want to do something like this should immediately know that attacking a school is a death sentence for them.
Kids are afraid of being the school snitch.
We have to stop letting these schools be gun-free zones.
People need to put their phones down and get to know the person next to them.
We have spent billions of dollars on COVID-related measures for our schools. Let's take some of that money and divert it over to hardening these soft targets.
A lot of these private schools, they take security way more serious.
Parents, take your children to church.
This anti-police narrative is forcing people not to call police.
A series of interlocking doors at the school entrance that are triggered.
By the way, how absurd, people are not calling the police. The police were on the scene 40 to 60 minutes while the shooter was rampaging in the classroom.
A tripwire, and it traps the shooter like a rat.
God is the answer to that.
There's a moral rot going on that we all need to dig in and try to address.
I vote for decreasing social media exposure.
We need to start focusing on mental health. Tell us why you think it's important to pray in a moment like this.
Right. It calls for faith and prayer.
Why is it that schools are protected in the same way that airports?
There are some people who don't want police officers in schools with guns because other people are triggered.
Assault rifle and enhanced.
Triggering is the people being triggered is the problem.
It's body armor.
A notification system to let everybody in the school know what's happening.
Single point of entry.
I don't like talking about this stuff as it happens because I don't think it contributes anything positive.
Parents should be held accountable for raising their children properly.
Ballistic blankets.
We just don't have the resources to get law enforcement there quickly.
How about an executive order
for these mental health facilities.
We have to start rebuilding this country and returning to God.
I arm myself everywhere I legally can.
It's up to you to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh boy, guys, we are screwed as a country. Dear God. By the way, you know, a couple of those suggestions: ballistic blankets and armor-plated backpacks for kids. The very same people who for 2 years have been saying, oh, if you make kids wear masks in schools, the psychological effect of that is going to destroy them. Now they're saying, let's send children to school with ballistic blankets and bulletproof backpacks to be taught by armed teachers in a school surrounded by tripwire with prison-like fences and airport security. Come on, guys. This is absolutely absurd. And I want to focus next on this issue of doors. Now they're blaming doors. All right. This is not a Saturday Night Live skit. This is not a joke. They are now blaming doors for the shooting in Uvalde, Texas. This is truly beyond parody. We're going to look at a video here of Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is not the only one talking about this. You see here a little screenshot from Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Sorry, I'm having trouble getting it on the screen. Here it is. Too many entrances and exits on campuses. Okay, so let's look. Here is Ted Cruz when he was in Uvalde yesterday, came across this new idea. Let's not talk about guns. Let's talk about doors.
Do you want to talk about how we could have prevented the horror that played out across the street? Look, the killer...
This is a principled and defiant Ted Cruz, bravely coming out against doors.
...entered here the same way the killer entered in Santa Fe, through a back door, an unlocked back door. I sat down at round tables with the families from Santa Fe. We talked about what we need to do to harden schools, including...
He's furious at doors, guys. He's furious at doors.
...not having unlocked back doors, including not having unlocked doors to classroom, having one door that goes in and out of the school, having armed police officers at that one door.
Okay. Then he went on Fox News. This started to get some traction. So then he went on Fox News and did the exact same routine about doors.
School's safer. And one of the things that everyone agreed is don't have all of these unlocked back doors. Have one door into and out of the school,
right,
and have that one door armed police officers at that door. If that had happened, if those federal grants had gone to this school, when that psychopath arrived, the armed police officers could have taken him out.
Remember, the armed police officers were there and they did confront the suspect. And then he went in for 40 to 60 minutes to rampage in the classroom. Think about the absurdity of these people. There's too many doors. It's not too many guns. There's just too many doors. Now, let's talk about doors, okay? At the high school I went to, now, during school hours, all of the doors are locked going in. You still have the push bar so you can get out, but the only door that's unlocked going in is the one that leads directly into the front office where people have to check in. Fine. I mean, okay, do that. That's fine. But remember, an armed officer did confront the shooter outside of the school, and then the shooter went in. And then we're learning that he was in there 40 to 60 minutes after the confrontation. What the hell is going on here? How is doors the issue? Secondly, children never go outside for recess. When the other concern from security experts about the one door thing is, if everybody knows the one door that's being used, then the shooter can just hang around right at that door. There are fire code issues as well. And, you know, when Ted Cruz says we got a psychopath here and the doors is what we need to do. Well, why wouldn't the psychopath target the kids backed up in the line to get in the one door that will let them through? So locking doors, having a police officer at the school, bulletproof windows, these are reactions, but they're not solutions. OK. And by the way, imagine that you do this at schools. Do you do it at the grocery store? Because the Buffalo shooting was at the grocery store. Well, what if it's the parking lot to the grocery store? Well, I guess you put in fencing around the parking lot and go through TSA style security to even get into the parking lot for the supermarket. Guys, churches now. OK, you've got to solve the issue of people trying to do the shootings. The doors are not going to be the solution. And Ted Cruz was actually confronted by a Sky News journalist, of all people, We're going to look at that a little bit later after we speak to Jonathan Haidt. Quick break, back after this. It's great to welcome back to the program today Jonathan Haidt, who is an author, social psychologist, and professor at NYU's Stern School of Business. He recently wrote an article for The Atlantic called Why the Past 10 Years of American Life Have Been Uniquely Stupid. Jonathan, always great to talk to you.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be back with you.
So in the article, you talk about a number of different things. You lead with the story of Babel as a sort of metaphor for what's happened in the United States since the 20s, starting in the 2010s, and the sort of fractured nature of the country. You talk about social media, you talk about political discourse, you've talked about the impact of Trumpism sort of on discourse and society. For people who maybe have not yet read the article, and we'll link to it, and everybody should, can you give us sort of a flow chart, a directional flow chart of the phenomena you observe?
Sure. Yes. Thank you for that. That's a good setup, because we think in narrative, we think in stories, things make sense. What we're going through now is so hard to understand. But if we tell the story, and it goes like this. In 1989, the Berlin Wall falls. We have this incredible period of optimism about democracy. This is also the period of the early internet. We had this incredible period of optimism about technology. For those who remember, the early internet was this magical, incredible place. We get into the early 2000s. Of course, we do have 9/11. We do have things get a little darker. But that decade, the early social media platforms, the optimism, Wikipedia, I mean, it was just incredible what this technology was going to do for democracy. I'd like to bring readers back now to the peak year of 2011, a year that starts with the Arab Spring. And we think, what dictator can stand up to people empowered by Facebook and other platforms?
Right.
That year ends with Occupy Wall Street. We think the people empowered. So 2011, we really is the peak year of techno-democratic optimism. 2012, Barack Obama's reelected. Gay marriage resolutions are passing all around the country. So it looks like this direction to history is clearly one direction, and it'd be the direction that would be favored by progressives. And then everything goes to hell beginning around 2014. A lot of weird stuff happens in 2014. My argument in the essay is that tribalism is very old. This left-right dynamic is very old. But something changed in the 2010s that made us afraid of each other, that made it very easy for people to intimidate each other, and that leads to fragmentation within the left, fragmentation within the right. And the key metaphor, if you go back to the Tower of Babel story in Genesis, it's a very short little story. The key line is that when God is offended by humanity's hubris, he says, "Let us go down and confuse their language so that they may not understand one another." And that's what's new. The break, it's not the cross-party hatred. That's been going on for a while. We've had that before. It's this new thing of just everything breaking up. We can't understand each other.
That piece reminds me, you know, oftentimes people will talk about Orwell's 1984. Mm-hmm. But what you just mentioned about the confusion is really more reminiscent to me of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, where it's a sort of, you could say, a fire hose of falsehood, or this inability to sort of discern what's real or what isn't. Is that an apt analogy to what you're describing?
It's, you know, there are elements of both, right? We all read, you know, at least for my generation, we all read those two works in ninth grade or whenever it was.
Yep.
And that's the way the 20th century thought about things. You know, either it's going to be, you know, dictators like Stalin and Hitler, or it's going to be some like techno oppression. But neither of those anticipated the decentralization revolution.
Mm.
That is, what's happening now has some echoes of, you know, the Stasi in East Germany, and people are afraid to speak and people can rat on each other, but there's no dictator. And so just as, you know, I've been learning a little bit about cryptocurrencies and, you know, decentralized finance, we talk about DeFi. In the same way, you might speak about DeTote, that is, there can be decentralized totalitarianism without any totalitarian, without any leader. We can all be afraid of each other, and that has effects that suppress discourse, suppress people dissenting on both sides. Moderates in particular are afraid to speak up because on the right, you're going to get death threats and be horrifically attacked. On the left, you'll be called a racist or transphobe. So social media makes it very easy for the passionate extremes to attack the moderates and to attack leaders. That, I think, has messed us all up since around 2014.
How did Donald Trump sort of exploit these circumstances?
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump, the diagnosis I hear from my friends who are clinical psychologists is narcissistic personality disorder. Everything's about him. He is not an evil genius. He is not Manichaean. He's not like this like brilliant Manichaean behind the scenes manipulator. He is what he is. He is a narcissist with very little self-control. And he just does what he does. And it just so happens that the political world, the communications world went insane around 2014 to allow someone like him to actually be out there tweeting. And, you know, we have negative partisanship. The more you attack the other side, the more people like you on your side. So my argument is that Donald Trump didn't cause the collapse of the Tower of Babel. He certainly made things worse. He made everything worse, made the passions worse, made the norms worse. I mean, I blame him for a lot. But had he never run, most of these things would still have happened, not quite as intensely, but they would have still happened. He benefited because in the pre-Babel era, before we were all fragmented, people saying the things he said, like that was automatic exclusion. Like everybody would have shunned him. You know, but afterwards, nothing makes sense anymore. There is no overarching narrative. It's Babel all the way forward.
Yeah, one of the things that I think resonates with me in terms of understanding that period is it seemed that it became much more acceptable to publicly say a lot of the things that before some people understood, I think this, but I probably shouldn't say it. I shouldn't say it at work. I shouldn't say it on social media. It was sort of normalized to some degree.
That's right. Well, that's right. And there was such a thing as polite society. There were some norms that were widely shared, maybe not on the far right and far left, but there was a sort of a, you know, a general consensus of polite society, and you could be outside. You could quickly get yourself outside polite society. Part of what I'm arguing is that there's always let's say how much voice do people have at each point on the spectrum, and it's always the case that people who are angry and loud are going to have more voice because they try harder. So the middle has less and the extremes have more. When social media comes in, and I don't mean early social media, I mean only after we get the like button, the retweet button, that's 2009. We get threaded comments in 2013, which encourages everyone to fight with everyone in the comment section. Mm-hmm. It's this new hyper viralized environment. That's what changes things. And when that happens, now the extremes get much more voice and the middle 80% gets much less. Many of us, we just keep our heads down. People are exhausted. They don't want to speak up. And we can't have a deliberative democracy when most people don't want to even join the discussion. And when the people in the discussion are incentivized, literally incentivized to be assholes, the more of an asshole you are, the more you say things that are extreme, the more you will be successful. So the incentives are so antithetical to what we need in our deliberative democracy.
You talked about the spectrum. There's this book, Waves of Rancor, which I think might not even be in print anymore, which talked about the early days of talk radio, how it was dominated by sort of conservative ownership as well as by church radio, low power church radio, and that this was part of why the right started to dominate talk radio. Now, one of the things I also think is a factor is that some of these platforms are better vessels for some right-wing ideas. So like, for example, yes. If you think about taxes, the right-wing idea of taxes are bad, maybe they're theft, maybe they're slavery, let's just make them as low as possible. It's super simple and concise, and it's great for talk radio. The position on the left is not let's make taxes as high as possible. It's, well, we need the right level of taxation to account for the social programs. Right? So it's already sort of like structurally a problem. Is this to some degree also a factor, but maybe even more so when it comes to social media, the number of characters that are allowed on Twitter and this type of thing?
Absolutely. If you think about the conditions under which people can have a discussion when they disagree, here's a really, really bad way to do it. How about let's bring people together and have them be perhaps anonymous? Mm. Let's bring people together who have no shared past, no shared future. It's a temporary interaction. Let's bring them together in a place in which you guarantee that there is no context. Whatever you say will be taken out of context because there is no context, especially Twitter. Twitter, of course, being the worst of all. And let's do it. Let's have this discussion take place in the middle of the Roman Colosseum so that the stands, you're having a discussion with someone, but you're not really talking to the person. You don't really care about the person. The audience, thousands of people all around cheering for blood. Some are on your side, some are on the other person's side. Now, what are the odds that you're going to have a good discussion about what do you think the proper tax rate should be in our country? What should we do about immigration? Like, you know, you cannot have a discussion. So So your question started with talk radio, and that is a huge part of our polarization. It's something I mentioned in the Atlantic article. I should have spent more time on. Talk radio really does radicalize the right in the beginning of the 70s, but especially in the 90s, Fox News, all the talk radio stars. It doesn't have a similar effect on the left. But I think my sense is that while talk radio made the right radicalize in the 90s, social media made the left radicalize in the mid-2010s. There's been a lot written from Matt Iglesias originally and others calling it the Great Awokening, an intensification of, wokeness is the word used by the right, but it really did change the dynamics on the left. There's always been, and there still is in the Democratic Party, a healthy debate between more the far left and the moderate left. So in the party, that dynamic is still going on, whereas in the Republican Party, there is none. All the moderates are dead or expelled. So the Republican Party, I say in the paper, the Republican Party has become the stupid party. You become stupid when you shoot your moderates. If you don't have dissent, if you have orthodoxy, you become stupid. You'll be wrong on most things. The Republican Party is the stupid party. The Democrats are not. But my argument is that if you look in many of our epistemic institutions, that is those that generate knowledge, universities, media, the arts, journalism, these, of course, are dominated by progressives. That's always been the case, and it's very much the case now. When those places, like the New York Times, when people can't dissent within a progressive organization, then that organization becomes structurally stupid. And so I think social media has intensified the power of progressive activists in a way that has often suppressed dissent on the left. And I think that actually, in the long run, I think that hurts the left.
Yeah, we talked before the start of the interview about how there is an asymmetry in how the extremes on either side are sort of impacted by the status quo. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that, but I also think it's important to mention the extreme of the left, however we define it. And I think sometimes what's called extreme maybe isn't that extreme by global standards, but let's put that aside for a moment. It doesn't seem to have that much power in the Democratic Party, as evidenced by on Reddit and Twitter in 2020. It looked like Bernie was just running away with this thing. And it wasn't even close in terms of how Democratic voters actually voted in the primaries.
Mm-hmm. That's right. No, you're right. It doesn't have that much power within the party. And that's the asymmetry. There's a great quote from John Stuart Mill. It's something like, in all of the great disputes about social matters, each side has been right in what it affirmed, though wrong in what it denied. And when I talk to people on the left, the number of crimes committed by the Republican Party, certainly from denying Barack Obama a Supreme Court appointment to trying to storm the Capitol to overturn, the crimes are, it's unbelievable the crimes the Republican Party has committed, and there is no comparison to what the Democrats have done. So people on the left are certain of that, and they're right. They're absolutely right. Why don't those damn Republicans realize that? Well, now talk to conservatives. They're, some will acknowledge that, the party, I'm not so comfortable with this, but do they have a list of crimes of what the CDC did, what the media did, what the universities did, and they've got videos, and they've got quotes, and they're quotes from people that you know. So here's what I'm saying. There's this giant asymmetry, and it's as in an argument between two spouses. Each side, they've got their list of violations of the other, and they don't match up. We're not talking about the same thing. So that's why, I've always been on the left. I was always trying to help the Democrats speak more intelligently about morality. That's why I got into political psychology. But when I wrote The Righteous Mind in 2011, I was writing it 2010-11, I began to get concerned, like, oh my God, actually, our country is coming apart. The partisanship is becoming outrageous. This is really dangerous. And so I started focusing more on how do we fix our institutions, get our political game working so that we can address these problems. And now I'm in a state of complete panic, because I think if you look at the trends, we are so far from we're so far from even understanding not just the other side, but what our own side is doing. We are so confused. We are basically lost in Babel.
Last thing I want to ask you about, and I know our time is not unlimited. If we narrow down a little bit and think about if and how social media should be managed or regulated based on your interpretation, every idea is out there from no regulation whatsoever, just like allow everything and let it police itself, to we need some kind of nonpartisan government board, but who decides who's on the board and all of the problems that come with that. Yeah. Where is your thinking on this at this point?
Okay. Well, so my thinking is, first, please stop talking about content moderation. And you framed it the way everyone does, is are we going to have more or less? No, I don't want to talk about that, because the question is just, are we going to move it up or down a little bit? Elon Musk would have moved it down. We'd have less moderation. Democrats would have moved it up. No, that's not where the action is.
So what's the right question?
the right question is, what is this technology, this platform that has changed our discourse? What is the architecture? What are the dynamics of this new platform after 2009 that has made it? We're never going to stop people from posting crazy nonsense, but why is it that after 2009, the crazier the nonsense is, the further it goes?
Mm.
What changed and how can we unchange it? And so there's two things. The first thing to attend to is who is on the platforms. And here, right now, any Russian agent can create 1,000 accounts a day and run them either personally or with bots. Any jerk, any asshole, and there are people who are trolls who have personality disorders, they get to harass as many people as they want. They get to make death threats. Nothing happens. Maybe the account gets shut down. They can make 100 more accounts. So the first thing is we must have user verification. You can still post with a fake name, but to get an account with posting privileges, we can't just let everyone make 1,000 fake accounts. That's insane. So any large platform, and Elon Musk even proposed this, at least partially, but authenticate users. So that's one. Pay attention to whether you have to at least show you're a person and old enough. Like, that would cut down on a lot of it. The second thing is the dynamics of amplification. Right now, the incentives are the nastier you are, the further you go. Let's try to reverse that. So it'd be very easy for Facebook or Twitter to quantify using AI and human coders, how aggressive is each person? You get an aggression score. And if all you do is say, you know, screw you, jerk, with exclamation points, you get a 5. You're like, you know, overall, on average, you're a 5 on a 1 to 5 scale. And what I'd like to see is when we start to open an account, your default is the filter set to 4. So I will see only people who are 4 and below, and the people who are 5, I don't see them. They don't see me. I don't want them in my public square. They don't belong in the public square. Now, if I want to lower my filter to 3 or 2, I can do that. If I want to see the asshole, I can raise it to 5. If we did that, the incentive would be no longer be as much of an asshole as you can. It would be, you know what? If you're a complete asshole, you're going to lose most of the world. They're not going to listen to you. So that's the sort of change that would be completely transformative. Whereas the eternal argument about more or less content moderation, who decides and where's the line, that hasn't gone anywhere in 100 years, 200 Correct. Years. It's never going to go anywhere.
Absolutely fascinating ideas. We've been speaking with Jonathan Haidt. The article in The Atlantic is called Why the Past 10 Years of American Life Have Been Uniquely Stupid. Jonathan, always really appreciate your insights.
Thanks so much, David. Let me just end by saying I've put all my resources on a single webpage. If you go to jonathanhaidt.com/social media, I have everything you could want to know about the effects of social media on teen mental health and on democracy, links to hundreds and hundreds of academic articles. So that's a sort of a one-stop shop where I show my work.
There are basic fundamental questions that have to be asked of every elected official, and they often are not being asked. And a British Sky News journalist confronted Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz yesterday and asked him very obvious and specific questions about the gun violence problem in the United States. Ted Cruz didn't like it. He accused the guy of playing politics and he walked away. Sky News is no left-wing bomb throwing network. Sky News is the British version of Fox News. Let's take a look at what happened.
And not unwelcome.
There are 19 sets of parents who are never going to get to kiss their child goodnight again.
Is this the moment to reform gun laws?
You know, it's easy to go to politics.
But it's important.
By the way, this is a focus group tested technique. If anyone ever brings up gun policy, you pejoratively say that that's politics. That's politics, and politics is bad, and it's the wrong time for politics. This is just a tool. It's a crutch that they use. But the reporter is not going to be dissuaded.
The heart of the issue.
I get that that's where the media likes to go.
And so that's the second layer of the attack. Okay, Ted Cruz is doing all the right things from the point of view of Republican disinformation. If anyone asks about guns, you call it politics. If they press you, you say, this is what the media likes to do, because the media is bad if you're a Republican. Okay, but the reporter is not going to be dissuaded.
It's not. It's where many of the people we've talked to here like to go.
The proposals from Democrats in the media, inevitably, when some violent psychopath murders people,
a violent psychopath who's able to get a weapon so easily, 18-year-old with 2 AR-15s.
If you want to stop violent crime, the proposals the Democrats have, none of them would have stopped this.
Well, actually, I gave a list of 10 ideas at the top of the show, four of which would have potentially had an impact in this particular case, but they don't want to try any of them.
Why does this only happen in your country? I really think that's what many people around the world just, they cannot fathom. Why only in America? Why is this American exceptionalism so awful?
You know, I'm sorry you think American exceptionalism is awful.
I think this aspect of it.
You get your political agenda.
No, it's honestly...
Yeah.
Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx. Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx. Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx. Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx. Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx. Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx. Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx. Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx. Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from online pharmacies that don't meet these criteria. Discover more helpful tips and resources at BeSafeRx. Go to fda.gov/BeSafeRx. Considering an online pharmacy? Explore BeSafeRx to find useful information and resources to help you purchase medicines safely online. A safe online pharmacy requires a doctor's prescription, has an address in the United States, has a licensed pharmacist, and is licensed by a state pharmacy board. It's best to stay away from